From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. I am your host, Jody Heiss, a senior vice president here at the Family Research Council and president of FRC Action. All right, a lot coming your way today. Let me give you the highlights of what we're going to be covering. Nearly 2 weeks after the back-to-back killings of two major Hamas and Hezbollah leaders, the nation of Israel remains on high alert for possible direct attacks from Iran.
We will always put our first hand out to peace, first and foremost. That's always the Israeli way of doing things. But when that hand of peace is rejected and we are met with terror and calls for our destruction, as Iran does, Israel will exact a heavy price for any aggression against us from any arena.
Well, that was Israeli government spokesman David Mincer earlier today. We'll get an update on the entire situation when CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell joins me from Jerusalem here in just a couple of moments. And Congress returns from its August recess next month, facing a budget sprint before government funding expires. And members of the House Freedom Caucus refuse to forfeit their year-long effort to pass all 12 appropriation bills. Well, Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry will be joining me with an update on what to expect in September. And we'll also get his thoughts on Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and his military service now that the Harris campaign has acknowledged the fact that he misspoke, should we say, when he mentioned that he had carried weapons of war. We'll talk to Scott Perry about that a little later in the program. And speaking of Tim Walz, now that he's facing national scrutiny for the first time in his political career, many are puzzled by the governor's unexplained 35-year relationship with the Chinese Communist Party.
I lived in China, and as I said, I've been there about 30 times, but if someone tells you they're an expert on China, they're probably not telling you the truth because it's a complex country. But it's critically important for us. I don't fall into the category that China necessarily needs to be an adversarial relationship. I totally disagree.
Now, I happen to be and understand a little about China and lived in China and speak Chinese. I'm pretty friendly with China.
Wow. Well, that was a couple of old clips from Walz speaking about his connections to China. Is Governor Walz simply naive? Is he naive about all the abuses of our geopolitical adversary? Well, Seamus Bruner, Director of Research at the Government Accountability Institute, will be joining me a little bit later in the program to explain that relationship that the governor has with China. So we've got a lot coming your way. Our website, of course, TonyPerkins.com. There are tons of resources there available for you. We encourage you to keep that close by. And don't forget, the team at iVoter Guide continues to be hard at work finalizing the iVoter Guide for this year's election, covering national, state, and in many instances, some local elections. We want you to be as informed as you can be as a voter. So if you would like to get updates as to these iVoter Guides and be able to access them when they're finalized, you can do so by texting the word guide to 67742. Again, that's the word guide, G-U-I-D-E, to 67742. All right, let's jump into today's program. It's been nearly 2 weeks after the killings of a senior Hezbollah commander in Beirut and a Hamas leader in Tehran. And Israeli officials continue to anticipate a retaliatory strike from Iran. This comes as negotiators expect leaders from Israel and Hamas to return to the negotiating table later this week, somewhere either probably in Cairo, Egypt, or Doha, Qatar. But for now, the nation of Israel remains on high alert. Well, joining me now from Jerusalem to discuss this is CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell. Chris, welcome back to the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Jody.
Well, we appreciate it. Listen, we've got a lot of prayer going up for you in Israel right now. Give us the overall picture. Perhaps let's begin. What's the mood in Jerusalem as you remain on high alert?
Well, I think the mood here, Jody, is tense. You know, from the conversations I've had with many Israelis here, they're anticipating something. They don't know exactly what kind of response Iran's going to have. Could it be symbolic? Could it be much bigger than it is? Was in April 13th and 14th when they fired 350 combination of ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, UAVs, and drones. So there is an anticipation. I think that's probably the best explanation of what Israelis are feeling right now. Now, right now, Jody, they're actually commemorating Tisha B'Av, which is Hebrew for the ninth of Av. Av is one of the Jewish months. And they commemorate the destruction of the first and second Jewish temples, expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492. So today, it's very solemn. It's the saddest day of the Jewish calendar. And there had been an anticipation that Iran and Hezbollah would use this particular day as a way to attack the state of Israel and the Jewish people.
Yeah, I can only imagine the tenseness that people feel right now. And with this special occasion would be, it has to just be extremely concerning to everyone. Chris, it seems like many people expected a strike to come sooner. Is there anything that we perhaps should make of the delay? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, there was a delay back in April. That's 2 weeks before the attack by Iran. There was that strike against an IRGC general in the Iranian consulate in Damascus. So the two-week wait is not unexpected. However, there has been reports almost on a daily basis that Iran's pulling back. Hezbollah may go in front of Iran, or now the latest, Jody, in the last day or so, has been Iran is going to strike, and it's going to be a big strike. Some people are anticipating within hours, maybe within days. There has been talk about the fact that perhaps Iran's new president was advising Iran to not provoke anything that could lead to a war. But the IRGC was maybe more aggressive and more assertive. So there could be an internal discussion within Iran and or Hezbollah about exactly how they want to proceed. Because one of the things that is different than April, Jody, is the fact that Israel is sending signals that it's not going to be restrained in its response. And it could be quite robust against either Iran, maybe its oil facilities, maybe even its nuclear facilities, and certainly against Hezbollah as well.
Yeah, that's been my thoughts with the delay. There's no question. It's been shown time after time that Israel will strike back, and they will strike hard. And as you mentioned, the oil reserves and the nuclear facilities, I think Iran has to be considering that those two are prime targets if they retaliate in Israel. So my thoughts were perhaps that's part of the reason for the delay. Maybe they're having second thoughts about that. But I guess we'll all come to see in the next few hours or days. Let me ask you this, Chris, because it seems the timing right now, the negotiating team is expected to take part, at least there's discussion of a negotiating team taking part in a meeting later this week that could potentially have some sort of framework for an agreement. What are you hearing about all that?
Well, there is a discussion. I think it's this coming Thursday, August 15th, that there would be those negotiations. Now, there is talk that Hamas is going to refuse to come to those negotiations, and that could forestall those entirely. I mean, the negotiations would include Egypt, the U.S., Qatar. But the question remains, and I think the latest that I've been hearing, anyway, Jody, is that Hamas may not be going to the negotiations, which would forestall that. There had been talk that you know, Iran, Hezbollah would wait till after those negotiations. We'll see. You know, there is a sense that that maybe Iran is looking for an off-ramp. Two points is, one is China depends on Iranian oil. That's one thing. Maybe China doesn't want them to get involved. The other thing is they supply a lot of UAVs to Russia. That could be another reason. There was a visit by the Secretary of the Security Council of Russia last week, and that there's a sense that that maybe they were trying to restrain them. And earlier today, the UK, France, and Germany sent a letter to Iran trying to de-escalate the situation. So all these factors, and there's certainly a lot of rumors and a war going on right now, Jody, and that's exactly what Jesus said would happen about 2,000 years ago. So we see lots of reports sometimes changing from hour to hour or day to day.
Yeah, it really is phenomenal what is unfolding before our eyes. And the biblical references you mentioned there, I mean, they just seem to be glowing right in the face of the entire world right now. And the off-ramp, I think there's a lot of people looking at and thinking about whether or not Iran actually is looking for an off-ramp right now. Frankly, that seems like it would make sense. But then you have the fact that Hamas is not going to show up at the negotiating table, would send on the other side, perhaps to indicate that they don't plan to be there because they plan to take some sort of action or know that action is coming. So who knows what's going to happen? You mentioned a little while ago about the Jewish fast, Tisha B'Av, which is underway right now, one of the saddest days, if not the saddest day on the Jewish calendar. How has that taken that whole fast, that holiday, how has that taken on a new tenor, a new meaning since October 7th?
I think it really increases the intensity of it, the commemoration for many of the Jewish people remembering what happened on October 7th. This is the first commemoration of Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, since October 7th. So I think a deeper sense of soberness, a solemnness. This, what's happened since October 7th, Jody, has affected Israelis so deeply, and almost everyone knows somebody that may have been murdered or massacred in October 7th, or knows somebody that may have fallen in battle in Gaza or is in uniform. So almost every family has been affected. So it makes it that much more serious. And I would add, Jody, we did a story last Friday. We heard more about it yesterday. There's really a growing crescendo of prayer by the body of Christ all over the world to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, to pray for the Jewish people. The people that I know that we talk to say it's unprecedented, it's global, and it's really focused on Isaiah 62. I put watchmen and watchwomen on your walls of Jerusalem to give me no rest till I make Jerusalem a praise in all the earth. So that's probably one of the encouraging things right now of how many people around the world are praying for the state of Israel and the Jewish people.
Well, I know we here at FRC and Washington Watch in particular, we try to keep that on the forefront over and over and over. But all the various avenues of FRC and FRC Action, the stand, everywhere we go, we are trying to keep each of you and Israel in prayer. So thank you. We're thrilled that you are sensing and very much aware of those prayers. Thank you, Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief at CBN News. Stay safe, my friend, and know that we are praying for you and all of Israel.
Thanks so much, Judy.
All right, friends, stay tuned. There's much more Washington Watch coming your way right after the break. Congressman Scott Perry will be joining me, and we've got a lot of ground to cover, so stay tuned. We'll be back on the other side of the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you joining us today. I'm Jody Heiss, your host. We welcome you aboard. All right, amid rising concerns of a major escalation in the conflict between Israel and Iran, the U.S. is now involved. The military has mobilized combat aircraft and missile-shooting warships to the Middle East, and this includes an order from Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to send a nuclear-powered submarine. It's armed with more than 150 missiles to the Middle East as well. Joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Scott Perry. He serves on several House committees, including the extremely important Intelligence Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 10th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. Congressman Perry, the General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's great to be with you, Jody. And unfortunately, these are unsettling times. And, you know, we shouldn't have to be sending our material, our equipment, and the men and women that serve in uniform to the Middle East. But yet again, that's what we find ourselves doing. And of course, the other side of the story that's not being spoken about much is the fact that this administration, President Biden, Vice President Harris, have approved over and over again more and more money for Iran and letting them, through their proxies, rattle their sabers, kill Jews, and wreak havoc around the region. And now we're being dragged further and further into what's the making of this administration. They've done this to themselves, and unfortunately, we're along with them.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I don't know if you're able to hear. I just got off with Chris Mitchell live from Jerusalem. Talking about the situation there. What about your thoughts? And I do want to get to some other things, congressional business, some other issues. But the situation in Israel is certainly dire, and tensions are high. Your thoughts about them potentially facing an attack from Iran?
Well, of course, all of us, none of us want that. And all of us have been concerned about that for a very long time. And again, the Biden administration has nobody to blame but themselves, because they've enabled Iran to do this. They've allowed Iran to receive billions upon billions of dollars in money that had been withheld in the past. And of course, Iran selling its oil on the open market. This is all financing the bellicose activities that are occurring around the region and around the globe. And so all of us are concerned about Israel. Of course, no one fights more fair than Israel. Israel hasn't asked for a fight. They didn't ask for this to fight to come to their doorstep. But you will find no one else that sends out leaflets or warns the enemy civilians that you have to leave before the strike happens. And yet that's what Israel constantly does, even so told that they need to participate in the ceasefire. They need to exercise restraint and they need to stop what they're doing. Always responding to the attack is what Israel is faced with, and always then responding to the ridicule from the national and international anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic community. We're very concerned about Iran and their position now. Of course, President Biden has been telegraphing weakness around the globe since the beginning of his administration, and those chickens are coming home to roost right now.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that the U.S. finds itself in a position it is right now as it relates to Israel. If I can switch gears and come a little bit closer to home, the Congressional Budget Office has projected some pretty sobering growth figures, if you will, some predictions regarding the U.S. economy drastically slowing down in the years to come, specifically measured up against the GDP. Your thoughts on that?
Well, again, this is a crisis of the Biden-Harris administration's making. And of course, they do have some cohorts in the legislature. Of course, the Senate is run by Democrats. They keep on spending. Well, you know, Jody, it didn't happen when you were here and nothing has changed in the Senate. They actually refuse to do any spending bills. And even when they do them, they absolutely refuse to trim any spending whatsoever. They will only agree to spend more money. And of course, their compatriots in the House of Representatives are no different. And so all this increased money being thrown into the economy by the federal government without anything to back it up means every single dollar that our consumers, our bosses have goes less. It doesn't go as far. And so they can't get the same amount of goods and services for a dollar that they could 3.5 years ago. And of course, the projections by the CBO is that under Biden and Harris, they're just going to continue to spend recklessly the way that they are. And of course, the prices are going to keep going up. Wages are not going to go up commensurately. And so you're not going to be able to purchase as much with the dollars that you have, which means people are buying groceries with their credit card bills. People can't afford electricity. They can't afford gasoline. That's just the way it's been. And if we're going to have Harris as the president, that's the way it's going to continue.
Yeah, it's like you said. I mean, we've all seen this year after year. It seems over and over. It's the same old verse over and over, a little bit louder, a little bit worse, though, it seems. And you and your colleagues there in the House Freedom Caucus, you're not willing to concede. You don't want to go back to yet another omnibus for government spending. And so there's the option of a continuing resolution, a CR. Tell us about all that real quickly. We've got a little over a minute. And if you will, I'd like to keep you over the break. I've got some more questions for you. But
okay.
Tell us about this spending.
You know, when we don't get our job done, when we don't come up with the spending package that's agreed to, then we have to find some way to fund the government past September 30th. That's the end of the federal fiscal year. It's usually done by continuing resolution until we can get that funding agreement made between the House and the Senate and the president. And so what that does is it keeps the current spending and the current policies in place until the impasse is broken. And oftentimes we can't even get any further than that. And then they pass what's called an omnibus, which means everything's thrown in it. And you either vote for it and keep the government open, or you vote against it for good reason, as you know, and then get accused of being for shutting down the government. You're not for shutting down the government. You just can't abide. You won't vote for spending your constituents into bankruptcy or continuing the same terrible policy that's bankrupting the country. But that's what we're going to be facing. The Freedom Caucus has said, no, we don't have to do that. Let's get our work done. And if we're going to pass a continuing resolution, let's make sure it includes the SAVE Act, which says that only people that are American citizens will vote in November's election. Now, the Democrats don't want that, Jody.
Congressman, let's leave it there.
Yep.
Let's pick it up there. When we come back from the break, I want to thank you for taking time to stay over a little bit longer. All right, friends, stay tuned. I've got Congressman Scott Perry from Pennsylvania on, getting into some very serious things happening in Capitol Hill. We'll continue this discussion right after the break. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for tuning in, joining us today. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you on the bus with us. All right, we have on the line with us right now, again, Congressman Scott Perry, a great representative from Pennsylvania. Scott, thank you for staying over the break. We really appreciate it.
Of course, Jody. And like I was saying, if we're going to do a continuing resolution, which just buys us some time to get the agreement, right? But let's get something for that. And we, those of us in the Freedom Caucus, have told our leadership and the country, we want to include the SAVE Act. It passed the House of Representatives. It passed there. It's sitting in the Senate. And all that says is that if you're in America, you intend to vote, you must be an American citizen. Now, Jody, as you know, the Democrats oppose that. Now, they don't have any good reason for opposing it. Of course, Chuck Schumer's not bringing it up. Joe Biden doesn't want to talk about it. Certainly Kamala Harris doesn't want to talk about it. Why wouldn't they want only American citizens voting in the presidential election? Of course, Kamala Harris is running for president, too. Wouldn't she just want American citizens voting? Or is she interested in some having someone else not eligible to vote to be voting as well? That should really be the question.
Yeah, listen, I just want to say thanks to you and all the members of the Freedom Caucus and some others, I'm sure, who will be supporting the SAVE Act, trying to push this through. And now's the ideal time to do it when you're dealing with the CR and omnibus, whatever's going to be coming up on the spending right. levels to protect our election and let only American citizens vote, which is already the way it's supposed to be. But we all know this is extremely volatile right now. This election is critically important that we secure it as much as possible. So thanks for your stance on that. If I can, I'd love to get your opinion on this, the topic, speaking of election, of Governor Tim Walz. Man, so much to deal with here, Scott. What about now their campaign is saying that they admit that he misspoke about his claims that he carried weapons of war. Tell us your reaction. As a veteran, as a general, give us your reaction to that.
Well, you know, misspeaking, is, Jody, in the public view, you know, oftentimes we say things we didn't necessarily mean at the spur of the moment when it gets heated. But this is not misspeaking. This has been done over years and years of claiming his status as a retired sergeant major when he really wasn't a retired sergeant major. And of course, very few people knew the whole story where he was serving in uniform and willing to come and accept the accolades that come from the honorable service in uniform, certainly willing to accept the pay. But when it came to actually going downrange, to going to the combat zone, suddenly he had to retire because he had to run for Congress and he couldn't be found. He abandoned his unit. A sergeant major is not a private. I was a private. When you're a sergeant major, you're the top enlisted person in the unit. And so your unit is dependent upon your leadership over a long period of time because they get used to you. You get used to them. You understand where each other are coming from. And soldiers fight the way they train. Once you take one component out of it, it really has a grave circumstance for the unit that's heading into combat. And he just simply cut and ran when it came time to show up for the fight. I find it incredibly disgraceful. I have had soldiers that came to me when they got their orders to deploy and said, well, hold on, I didn't sign up for this. I thought I just joined for education benefits. And I had to remind them, you joined the military service, the uniform military service. In my case, you joined the Army. What did you think was going to happen? Mr. Walls has much more explaining to do than I just misspoke. What he did was he betrayed his unit. He betrayed his country, and he's betraying the voters right now by trying to pull the wool over their eyes and thinking and having them just believe that he misspoke at one moment. This is a pattern of lying over something very precious to many people, which is honorable military service, and it is disgraceful.
It really is, and extremely well said. From a patriot, from someone yourself who served and knows what it is to be deployed and retired as a general. There's so many. I know there's got to be tons of veterans who are upset about this. In fact, there was a Facebook post by John Cobb, who became lieutenant colonel of the Minnesota unit a few months after Walz quit to run for Congress. And he's criticized the governor. Do you expect these kind of criticisms to build as it goes forward?
Well, I do expect them to build, but I also expect that the people within the state will be concerned that that he might win as the vice president and exact retribution on them, or maybe even worse, that they'll lose and he'll remain the governor and then come after them. So there are going to be people that have firsthand knowledge that are going to be, let's say, reluctant to speak freely. But the rest of the members who have worn the uniform, who are not going to have to be worried about a Governor Tim Walz or a Vice President Tim Walz, are going to speak freely. And I will tell you, as one person that's worn the uniform for a long period of time, I find it disgusting, disgraceful, unacceptable. And I do not accept as an excuse or a reason that he misspoke. He misled the American people and the people of his state by design for years. Unacceptable.
Yeah, there's a big, big, big difference between misspoke and misled. And I think you right. Hit that right on the head, putting it that way. Congressman Scott Perry from Pennsylvania, always great to see you. Retired general, former chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, dear friend and former colleague. Always great to see you. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
Jody, God bless you. God bless this audience.
Thank you so much. All right, friends, we've got a lot more to cover, and that just started some of the conversation on Governor Walz. We've got more to bring your way. Did you know that the former governor has incredibly concerning ties with communist China? And those ties go way back for decades. Stay tuned. We'll bring you up to speed on all the latest there and reason to be concerned right after the break. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, and thank you so much for joining us today. Just a reminder before we continue on, we do have a petition urging President Biden as well as the various presidential candidates to support Israel. And we'd encourage you to sign that petition just to add more weight to our urging them to do so. You can get the petition one of two ways. You can go to frcaction.org/support, or you can simply text the word support to 67742. And again, that is going to President Biden and the presidential candidates, urging them to support Israel. And if you or someone you know happens to be wondering, why should we be praying for, why should we be standing with Israel? We've got a fantastic brand new resource that Tony has put out. It's called Why We Must Pray For and Stand with Israel. Folks, that says it all. We want to send you a digital copy of that, both for your personal use as well as to share. And we'll do so with any gift amount that you send to FRC, we will send you this free digital copy. And again, you can find out more by texting the word Israel to 67742. All right. As I discussed in the last segment, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, and frankly, for the first time, as he's going now through a national campaign, for the first time in his life, he is experiencing all sorts of scrutiny from the press, and frankly, is kind of the type of scrutiny that he has managed to avoid while he was in other campaigns in the deep, dark blue state of Minnesota. But now that it's national, there's a lot of things coming out in the open for which he's having to give an account. Things like now, we're finding out more than 30 trips that he has taken to China, including, catch this, including a honeymoon vacation that he went to China, and it was timed with the fifth anniversary of the Tiananmen Square crackdown. Now, some of you won't remember that. Those my age or more, you will. But that was a crackdown against pro-democracy protesters, and China came down hard on them. Tim Walz goes there for a honeymoon 5 years after on the anniversary, 5 years of that. It's amazing. So does Tim Walz somehow cozy up with China simply because he's naive? Or is there more behind all of this? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Seamus Bruner. He's the Director of Research at the Government Accountability Institute and also the author of the book Control Oligarchs, Exposing the Billionaire Class, Their Secret Deals, and the Globalist Plot to Dominate Your Life. He recently published an article in Breitbart with the headline, Seven Troubling Tim Walz Connections to Communist China. Wow. Seamus, thank you for joining us again on Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Hey, Jody, it's great to be with you. You know, the stolen valor stuff is a total disgrace. We're finding out more and more examples of times that Tim Walz misrepresented his rank, tried to insinuate that he was actually deployed to a war zone. And so pretending to be a war hero is a disgrace. But it's even worse, more egregious, when you consider the fact that that Tim Walz has been cozying up to America's number one adversary for going on 30 years, 30 plus years. And so if you start at the beginning in 1989, Tim Walz was in China. He then promptly sets up a company called Educational Travel Adventures Incorporated and begins taking American students to China. And he has nothing but effusive praise to lavish on the Chinese. And he tells his students on these trips, he's taken more than 30, which is bizarre in and of itself. How many governors of states in America have taken 30 plus trips to China? But he tells his students on these trips, downplay your Americanness. Don't try to make it seem like you're an American patriot here. And so what does he get from the Chinese Communist Party? Well, they start subsidizing these trips. This was reported in local press. The CCP actually paid for scholarships to bring Walz and his students to China for these cultural exchanges or whatever they're calling them. That's just shocking. I mean, I've talked to multiple U.S. intelligence experts here that say there is a 0% chance that Tim Walz and the Ministry of State Security, that's the China's version of the CIA, there's no chance that China's CIA didn't know about these trips, approve these trips, and basically he was doing what they wanted.
Wow. Well, and that's just like you said, that's just the beginning of it. There's also visits with diplomats from the CCP, and even some of them attending his gubernatorial inauguration. That is pretty alarming. Why would they be there for his inauguration? Tell us some about those trips and those relationships.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's you know, the Team Walz, Team Harris, they would like to downplay and make it sound like it was ancient history. All these trips that he took were back in the 90s. That's not true. He traveled as recently as 2015, and then he has his eyes set on higher office, national office. And so he's a congressman. But when he becomes governor at his inauguration in January of 2019, there's a CCP delegation, a consul general attends this. Now, you can't just show up to someone's inauguration. You have to be invited. And so Tim Walz or his team invited this diplomat. And then that consul general, he travels from the inauguration. He congratulates Walz on the win. He says he can't wait to form more lasting ties between the state of Minnesota and China. And then that diplomat, he travels to a local NGO called Global Minnesota. Now, this is, I mean, stocked full of Tim Walz cronies. They invite Tim Walz to give speeches. It's kind of a globalist organization, Global Minnesota, and the diplomat meets with them. And that organization is partnered with another pro-Walz organization called the Chinese American Association of Minnesota, which is housing a secret police station. This was reported in the Daily Caller. They call them overseas service centers. But basically, Beijing has at least seven that we know of throughout the United States secret police stations. And so what do these things do? They go and round up and harass and intimidate former Chinese citizens who have immigrated to the United States as dissidents or asylum seekers, people critical of the Communist Party. These service centers harass them, intimidate them and their families. And so one of them is operating right out of Minnesota, the Twin Cities, and is close with Tim Walz. I mean, they've promoted Tim Walz before. And so that's shocking. And then the last thing I'll say here is Tim Walz has been invited as a keynote speaker to numerous, at least three that we know of, maybe four that we know of, events that are backed by the Chinese Communist Party's intelligence apparatus. These are called United Front Groups. They're basically an arm of the intelligence apparatus in Beijing. And Tim Walz is a keynote speaker. We don't know if he got paid or if he just did it out of charity or kindness of his heart. But it's nonetheless disturbing. We've never seen a governor with such cozy ties to the communists in Beijing.
Wow. You know, Seamus, I never even knew that there was some sort of secret police that is Chinese here in the United States, and they're going around intimidating dissidents, individuals who have left China. But when you say that, those people have left China to come to the United States for freedom, for liberty. And here, are you saying we have a secret police here, in this case, in Minnesota, that Governor Walz knew about, and he allowed them to intimidate and harass those individuals who fled communist China to come here to the United States for liberty?
Well, the first thing we learned about these, they're called overseas service centers. They're operated by the Chinese Communist Party. The first thing we learned about them is that the Justice Department busted one in April of 2023. And so all of that activity has been according to the Justice Department. And so they identified several more. Seven is the number that we have. One is in Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, all the big cities. But what's so strange is that one of these service centers is operated out of Minnesota. I mean, you kind of wonder, what the heck does Minnesota have to do with China? And that's what makes Tim Walz such a you know, person worthy of further investigation, is there is one of these. It's operating out of the Chinese American Association of Minnesota. This was broken by the Daily Caller. And you know, we don't know all that much about its activities, but we do know that the Justice Department has indicted a different overseas service center for exactly those activities, harassing and intimidating dissidents.
Wow. I tell you, that's unbelievably disturbing. And of course, all along the way, there's been I think, at least in my opinion, a long history of the governor making, is it fair to say, outlandishly pro Communist China comments, but that's accurate, isn't it? I mean, he has been pro-China for a long time, to the point of kind of being outlandish with it all.
Yeah, that's right, Jody. I mean, going back to the very beginning, when he came back from his first trip, he said it was the greatest experience of his life, that he was given so many gifts by his Chinese benefactors that he couldn't even bring them all home. He's given what the CCP calls big help with a little bad mouth, where occasionally he'll sprinkle in some comments about human rights abuses, very generic stuff. For example, on the 20th anniversary of Tiananmen Square, he was a congressman at the time, and he gives a statement where all these people are criticizing Tiananmen Square, calling it a massacre. He never called it a massacre. And by, you know, some estimates in the West, credible estimates in the West, up to 10,000 Chinese protesters were killed during the Tiananmen Square massacre. Numbers into the thousands, at least. He never called it a massacre. And here's the most shocking thing that he did. He drew a moral equivalence from the Tiananmen Square massacre to an event that happened in the United States over 100 years ago, the Wounded Knee Massacre, where 38 Native Americans tragically, I mean, nobody is going to defend Wounded Knee, but 38 Native Americans were murdered. And Tim Walz, on the floor of Congress, says, you know, well, in China, some people did something, but we've got our own problems too. Wounded Knee. And then he spends more time talking about Wounded Knee than he does the Tiananmen Square massacre. And so that's just one example. There are dozens and dozens of examples of quotes where he just praises China. He tacitly praised their police state by saying when he came back from China, he was shocked that there's no crime. Yeah, that's because they round everybody up. They use facial recognition software and they throw them into camps, even if they're not lawbreakers. They've got the social credit score. So you never hear him talk about social credit scores in China or how about the fentanyl that they're shipping to our shores or any of the other things that they have done. It's all very muted criticism.
All right. Everybody needs to be taking this information in. This is exceedingly alarming. And underneath all of this, Wall says that there's areas of cooperation between the U.S. and China. Seamus, let me ask you this. Is he deliberately naive about the human rights abuses of the communist regime, or is there something else underneath here that is forcing him to cozy up with China?
Well, that's what we're digging to get to the bottom of. We know he had this company, Educational Travel Adventures, Inc. He's now shut that company down once he joined Congress. But we're looking into his campaign contributions, and we're following the money. We'll have a full cash analysis to find out if any money from Beijing has gone to Congressman Walz. That's our motto here, is to follow the money. You know, I can say at a preliminary look at his finances, he hasn't done that well, you know, not as a criticism, but he, you know, he doesn't own a home anymore. He sold his home. He doesn't own any stocks or bonds. And so it's tricky, but we're getting into the campaign contributions. And the bottom line is that Walz and Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and all of these high ranking progressives, they're all pretty muted on China. Every once in a while, they'll have a criticism. But we find time and again, especially with the Biden family, they had business deals with China. And that is why they don't speak so strongly in condemnations of the human rights.
Yeah, and it appears as though, and I'm sure your investigation will dive into this, but it appears as though a similar compromise exists with Walz, where he openly claims that he got gifts and gifts and gifts and gifts, more than he could bring home, or however it was stated. But the fact is, there appears to be a compromise there. This, of course, is a message that the Trump-Vance campaign is focused on. Everything from bringing manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. To understanding the threat that China poses. Is this an issue, the threat of China, something that a Harris-Walz administration can be trusted to secure?
Yeah, absolutely not, Jody. It's really troubling. A lot of Americans, you know, good patriotic Americans, can't fathom the fact that the elite political class in Washington, and this includes members on both sides, actually like China. They actually admire the Chinese system. I talk about it in the book Control Oligarchs. People like Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci, they praise the Chinese system. They love, I mean, they use euphemisms like efficiency. They love the efficiency, which means brutal crackdowns on dissent. But they actually admire a Chinese system. And I see that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, I mean, just look at their COVID policies. They wanted to lock people in their homes. Governor Walz, He put up a tip line so that neighbors could be snitching on one another. That's something that Mao would do, is have, you know, turn in your neighbors to the party. And so it's troubling. I mean, people can't fathom that in America, communism is coming here. But I mean, again, go to Tim Walz's own statements. He says some people's socialism is other people's neighborliness. So he equates socialism to neighborliness. So it's really shocking stuff.
It really is. And I would think with all of that, it's probably safe to assume that the Chinese Communist Party would prefer Donald Trump not return to the White House. Thank you so much, Seamus Bruner, Director of Research at the Government Accountability Institute. Incredible conversation. Thank you for joining us. All right, friends, that's it. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.